very good Wednesday, and welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's Walnut Wednesday episode, panelists from this year's California Walnut Conference will give their take on the future of pesticides as it relates to growing walnuts. I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
In an unusual move into California state politics, President Joe Biden has weighed in support of a proposed law now on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk that would make it easier for farm workers to organize. I strongly support California's Agricultural Labor Relations Voting Choice Act, according to Biden in a recent statement. Farm workers work tirelessly at a great personal risk to help keep food on America's tables during a pandemic, he said. In a state with the largest population of farm workers, the least we owe them is an easier path to make a free and fair choice to organize a union. So far, Newsom has not signed Assembly Bill 2183, which was written by Assemblymember Mark Stone, a Democrat from Scotts Valley, and approved by both the Assembly and the Senate last month. Newsom vetoed a similar measure last year. Last month, the spokesperson issued a statement that the governor is eager to sign legislation that expands opportunities for agricultural workers to come together and be represented, but the governor did not support the bill in its current form. The proposed law allows farm workers choices on how they vote in union elections, including voting by mail. Currently, the state holds secret ballot union elections at a polling place designated by the State Agricultural Labor Relations Board. United States Department of Agriculture Undersecretary Robert Bonney, along with California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross, Jeff Yasui with USDA RMA, and Carlos Suarez with the National Resources Conservation Service, spent the day on a tour of the Sacramento Valley co-hosted by the CRC and NCWA. They heard from biologists and conservationists on environmental impacts due to drought, as well as met with local businesses that are key in California's rice production process. In the first stop, Undersecretary Bonney got a firsthand look at the unique relationship California rice has with the environment, seeing rice fields in production with a YOLO bypass wildlife area, which is managed by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. CRC's Wildlife Programs Manager Luke Matthews and Environmental Affairs Manager Paul Butner spoke about the collaborative efforts underway to maximize winter habitat for the millions of migratory waterfowl that travel the Pacific Flyway annually, relying on the nutrients from the decomposed rice straw during the winter months. Jeff McCreary and Mark Engstrom with Ducks Unlimited and Jacob Katz with Cowtrout also highlighted the role the rice plays in conservation for wildlife. Other important topics included ongoing efforts to reconnect the floodplain with Dave Guy and Todd Manley and with Northern California Water Association. Also in attendance was Congressman Mike Thompson, a Democrat from St. Helena, who earlier this year introduced a bipartisan resolution in the House of Representatives recognizing the decades of work that California's rice industry has done to support the environment. The next stop on a tour was Williams in Colusa County, just one of the many rural ag communities with the Sac Valley that has faced devastating work and job loss due to drought. From the farm to dryers to the mills, stories of concern and extreme hardships are shared by those who play a vital role in California's rice production workforce. In a sobering moment showing the reality of just how unprecedented this year has been, pilot Richter presented Undersecretary Bonney with an engraved model ag aircraft. The yellow planes are synonymous with Sacramento Valley agriculture and have not been seen, heard, or flying over the region as frequently this year. Richter shared about he and his wife have spent four decades building up their ag aircraft company, Richter Aviation, based in Colusa County. This year, their family business is operating at just 20% of normal, forcing planes to be grounded and positions typically held by skilled pilots to go unfilled.
The Sustainable Groundwater Management Act is sneaking up on California growers already, faster than they thought it would, and it's a big concern when it comes to available water in the future. Richard Matoyan, president of American Pistachio Growers, explains.
What we're hearing from the Sustainable Groundwater Agencies is in order to be stable by 2040, they have to start doing things like now. And unfortunately, that's just come a whole lot sooner or quicker than any grower could have wanted or believed.
However, the problem is severely overdraft areas in the San Joaquin Valley, and he talks about the stress on growers.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of critically overdrafted basins, and just the fact that we haven't built storage facilities to capture water during the wintertime, all the water going out to the ocean due to the biological opinions, all of those things have just added up over time to just create this problem that we're in.
Richard Matoyan, president of the American Pistachio Growers Association.
Supplies of imported summer citrus look to be consistent right now. The past seasons have shown tremendous growth in availability, and supply is no longer a concern, especially during August or October, up until the domestic season starts in November, according to Zach Lafita, president of Wonderful Citrus. Right now, summer citrus is coming from South Africa, Peru, and Uruguay. Wonderful Halos branded Easy Peelers are arriving from South Africa, as well as oranges. He says they've had an exclusive relationship with a large grower and exporter in South Africa, which provides significant volumes of fruit that meet the taste and quality expectations. Lafita says this is extremely important since the fruit quality of Wonderful Halos allows the brand to continue to deliver upon its sweet, seedless, and easy-to-peel virtues. Compared to historical timing, Wonderful Citrus's summer import program began much earlier this season. This is due to California's extended supply in 2021 and overall crop conditions in the Southern Hemisphere, combined with logistical challenges delayed import sales by roughly 2 weeks. Meanwhile, he expects demand for summer imported citrus to continue to grow. He says they've seen a peaked interest in citrus subcategories for their functional benefits and convenience. Consumers continue to seek out good-for-you snacks that they can incorporate into their healthier lifestyles, especially ones offered by citrus. Easy peeler varieties are particularly driving that growth, as availability has grown seedless fruit and delivering on quality and appearance is key to success. Lafitte is seeing higher pricing and higher velocity with greater traction for this summer import program. He says due to inflation as well as labor shortages, which directly impact fuel, freight, and warehousing costs and access, pricing has been impacted. Additionally, international shipping and worldwide supply chain issues stemming from the pandemic are still a problem. These challenges increase costs and result in delays in shipments, but they're hopeful they will improve over the next several months. Overall prices have increased from last season, although these increases do not come close to covering the increased cost for growers. Looking ahead, imported Wonderful Halos are entering the promotional season in time for the back-to-school season. Domestic Wonderful Halos will return to stores in November, coinciding with a targeted multi-million dollar marketing campaign, including social media, in-store point-of-sale displays, and a collection of colorful stickers as part of the campaign.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Taylor Charlstrom joins us here on Amaya AgLife Daily News Report with this week's edition of Walnut Wednesday.
At the 2022 Walnut Conference earlier this year, industry professionals gathered on a panel to discuss the future of pesticides, particularly those that pertain to walnut growers. Optimism had its place, but there are also woes to keep in mind as the landscape changes and harsher chemicals are phased out. UC Riverside plant pathologist Jim Adiscavage said fungicide availability for walnuts has a positive outlook, but bactericides are a different story.
Bactericides, we've been through 4 or 5 pre-date changes, and the industry is being pushed back to develop new bactericides. So the EPA is afraid of repercussions with some of these bactericides because not only bacteria can cause plant diseases, but they can cause human diseases and animal diseases. And so it's a really tough environment for developing new bactericides. What we're trying to do is to develop things that we haven't looked at before, softer chemistries, plant-based products, fermentation products, and we're trying to diversify our portfolio of materials so that if we do have something that's canceled and we're worried about mancozeb right now, with the EU canceling it for their growers. There's walnut growers in the EU that they can't use mancozeb anymore. So we're really watching what's happening in the EU, and we don't really want to see risk. We want to see what their hazard-based systems moving from the EU hazard assessments. We want to maintain our risk assessment methods in the United States and with the EPA so that we can assess the risk and then integrate these types of materials. And even if we're limited to one application per year, if we have five or six of these materials and we're only using them once a year, the risk will go down. And this is our mistake if you want to look back over the last 30 years. You know, we got mancozeb registered in the early 1990s and through Section 18s that lasted for 20 years. And we were basically living on that strategy, copper mancozeb. And what has happened in Florida, they did the same thing with a bacterial disease, Xanthomonas, on tomatoes and peppers. And they relied on the copper mancozeb almost exclusively. And as of the last couple years, the bacterial pathogen developed resistance not only to copper, but to mancozeb as well. So we're like 10 years behind the Floridians. And so what we're trying to do is introduce new products. We have Dodeine registered now, and that got registered last year, a UPL product, which is known as Silit. And we're trying to use that like a mancozeb material. And if we rotate these things and keep mancozeb, if we can fight for it for one application per year, we'll be able to have some of these other materials to rotate to and still be able to have some softer chemistries, but yet different modes of action that can help sustain and not select for resistance. And that's our number one goal.
Wilbur Ellis's Ethan Matthews, another member of the panel, added the importance of conversating with regulators and letting them know firsthand the exact problems walnut growers, for example, are dealing with when it comes to pesticide use and availability.
We know that the NGOs they're certainly listening to them. And if they don't hear your perspective about the actual problems that you're dealing with, why you need products, then they're going to continue on in that direction. And they very well might anyways, but you have to try, because otherwise they're only hearing one side of the conversation, and you're going to continue to see these types of policies come out of the government. So while it can be discouraging at times, I'd say you got to step up every time and make sure that your voice is heard. Explain to them the economics and the agronomic implications of reduced access to some of these chemistries, because I just don't think that they get it. So you got to be a part of that conversation.
Another challenge is getting those involved with regulatory bodies that don't have experience with production agriculture involved in what the ag industry is actually doing to transform pesticide use.
If people outside of agriculture knew what was going on, they'd be absolutely stupefied. But no matter what we do within this industry, it seems like it's never enough for our opponents or for the regulatory bodies. So that's the big challenge we have. I sometimes think that our opponents have a louder voice than what we do. So we need to be engaged continually with our regulatory bodies and our legislatures.
The pesticide stewardship in California is like no other state, according to California Walnut Board and Commission's Josh Rahm.
You know, California, the most comprehensive and state-of-the-art in the entire world when it comes to this pesticide use enforcement program, 100% pesticide use reporting. You know, only state being California that requires all commercial pesticide use to be reported monthly, okay? And there have been over 32,000 field inspections, and it's a 98.2% compliance rate for all inspection types statewide. So that's a pretty flawless number, and it shows and goes to say the amount of regulatory compliance and stewardship that's being done and how safe, sustainable things are being done at a field level and only using products when needed and having all these additional requirements. Just wanted to say a good job to everyone in the room and those not here, that these numbers are tremendous, and they're probably only going to get better.
As for a more positive outlook on specific chemistries as far as neonics go, panelists agreed that imidacloprid, a chemistry used often by walnut growers in the state, still has at least a few years before it's phased out.
It's going to take time for at least for Cal EPA to make its recommendation. We're looking, we kind of believe that we'll have imidacloprid out here through at least through 2023. That's our hope. But things change over in the EU, and it's really hard to predict. One of the things we're doing, and it's kind of with MRLs here, is we're trying to predict what's going on in the future. And I last year had a residue program with some selected materials that are not under any pressure at all. We're just trying to get ahead of the curve so that if we get blindsided like we did with the Lunas in almonds, we're prepared. For some of you who don't recall, for years we sold Lunas throughout the season in almonds. We had an MRL of 0.05 ppm, and the EU decided one day they wanted to take it down to 0.03. And we can't meet that with later season applications, so we're restricted to bloom time applications, essentially. This is an almond thing. And the other thing I'll mention is what we're doing is don't mean to put a plug in for it, but we've got another product that has been around for a while. We finally got it in grapes called Savanto. And we developed this thing years ago, and it was primarily a defensive product. It's not a neonic, but it is a different class of chemistry, has neonic-like properties, but has a much better environmental profile, particularly on bees. And it's going to be a drop-in for imidacloprid when the day comes when we can no longer use it either foliar or in the soil. And that was a material we got registered in California on wine grapes in 2014. It took us 8 years to get the MRLs approved in the EU. So these are some of the things that we're all dealing with here with respect to pesticides at both the grower and a basic manufacturer level.
Regardless of current woes, technology has made researchers and ag personnel optimistic for the future of walnuts as it relates to pesticides.
When I see what's going on within the industry and the incredible innovations that are going on with chemistry, with biologicals, and with technology, I'm optimistic that we're going to get beyond where we are right now, and we're going to be growing walnuts 5 years from now and far beyond that.
I think we have the basis of what we've been talking about, of new tools being laid down, we're testing them, and I think that, again, diversifying our toolbox, not dependent on any one product, will help in the supply chain. It'll help in making sure that we meet all the regulatory requirements and issues that they have, and so I think we're on the right path forward.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Global food prices dropped for a fifth straight month after a seasonal rise in supplies took place and demand dropped for some products. The North Hemisphere wheat harvest is helping ease supply concerns as more grain moves out of Ukraine. A UN index of world food costs dropped 1.9% in August and remains at its lowest level since January. While consumers will feel some relief, the declines aren't as sharp as they were in July, when food prices dropped the most since 2008. Food prices do remain higher than last year. Food costs fell across the board last month, with vegetable oils dropping slightly below last year's level. More palm oil supplies from Indonesia and seasonally rising outputs in Southeast Asia helped to lower prices. Import demand for sunflower oil is subdued. Dairy stocks remain adequate. Ethanol and vehicles they power may face increasing competition from electric ones and the utilities that power them, but one key state's experience shows how long that fight could take. The same week California announced it will end the sale of new liquid-fueled vehicles in 2035, a heat wave forced a power emergency and a request that consumers reduce demand, including charging EVs. That underscored the corn ethanol industry's argument that a wholesale switch to electric vehicles may be impractical even in 13 years.
2035 hard deadline, sitting here 13 years away from that deadline, it's hard for me to see how that is plausible.
USDA Secretary of Agriculture made an announcement recently that the agency is investing $100 million into biofuel infrastructure. And as aviation biofuel is now being developed, that could provide another market for ethanol, especially if EVs eventually make a dent in the liquid fuel car market. The United States is being projected to run at an ag trade deficit for fiscal year 2023. One USDA expert says that is not a sign of disaster for the U.S. agricultural industry. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
In fiscal year 2021, the U.S. ran an ag product trade surplus with the rest of the world of almost $9.5 billion. For this 22 fiscal year, that surplus expected to be only $4 billion. USDA says for this coming year, no surplus, but a $3.4 billion trade deficit.
Trade surplus, trade deficit, that in and of itself isn't so crucial.
USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says when we have a surplus, it is something to have bragging rights about.
But the economist in me says, hey, you know, what this is we're exporting the things that we're really good at, and we're importing the things that we want to import from overseas. Maybe that's a specific cheese you like, or maybe that's a counter-seasonal product where I can get grapes at a time of year that an American agricultural producer doesn't have them. So the economist in me says, trade deficit alone is neither good nor bad.
He says the U.S. ran an ag trade deficit both in 2019 and 2020, no serious after effects. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA is extending a key funding flexibility in the WIC program that's allowed state agencies and their infant formula manufacturers to work together to provide more options for needy families. Under this flexibility that is now extended to the end of October, USDA is covering the added cost of non-contract formula to make it financially feasible for states to allow WIC participants to buy alternate sizes, forms, or brand of infant formula. USDA is committed to maintaining flexibilities to provide continued support to WIC families as the nationwide supply of infant formula recovers. According to USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, he said WIC families are counting on USDA. While the supply of formula is improving, the extended flexibilities will make sure those families can find the formula they need for their babies. To make the extended flexibility economically feasible, USDA is covering the additional costs of these alternate formulas while supplies remain impacted. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has updated their net farm income projections for 2022. Farm News reporter Michael Clements has the details.
USDA's Economic Research Service released its September 2022 farm income forecast Thursday. American Farm Bureau Federation economist Bernd Nelson says USDA revised farm income to be higher.
Today's report adjusted the forecast for 2022 net farm income up by $7.3 billion, or 5.2% from 2021. This follows an increase of $45.9 billion in 2021 from 2020. ERS also adjusted the February 4th net farm income projection for 2021, increasing the forecast in the September report by $21.3 billion, or nearly 30%.
While enjoying increased farm income, expenses are higher as well.
February report showed a 17% increase from 2021 to 2022 in total farm expenses. The September forecast increased total expenses $437.3 billion. The greatest increases in expenses came first from fertilizer, up 41%, and second place was pesticides, up 25% from last year. In third place, we have fuel costs increasing by 22% since 2021.
Nelson adds there's been a lot of changes globally since the February report.
I think the Russian invasion of Ukraine was really a wake-up call when we talk about a secure food supply. Disruptions caused by the invasion caused a spike in crop prices, and then they came way back down again. This is a result of our farmers. They really stepped up to the plate, and production was good. This has caused some of our supply concerns to be mellowed out a little bit.
Michael Clements, Washington.
World Fresh Produce is pleased to announce the appointment of Patrick Haynes as its Executive Vice President. Haynes is a highly respected industry veteran who carries a wealth of experience and an entrepreneurial mindset that will continue to propel WFP into the future. Patrick brings significant expertise in strategic development, leadership, and retail to the team from his previous positions in a 34-year long run at Walmart, according to Michael Matauk, President. He says they value the experience and perspective he brings to the business. Haynes is a longtime contributor to the fresh produce industry, having served in the past as senior director and hub leader for Walmart Global Food Sourcing, merchandise manager for Walmart, and a participating member of the PMA Global Development Committee and the IFPA Supply Chain Council. The appointment of Haynes begins a new chapter in World Fresh Produce's journey as it seeks to further reinforce its values of quality and freshness, collaboration, transparency, passion for produce, and innovation.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.